Hello and welcome to another episode of the Menswear Style Podcast. I'm your host, Pete Brooker. On this episode, I'm going to talk to Alistair Tusting, Director of Tusting, and Gillian Tusting, Head of Brand at Tusting. I'm going to peel off a little info on the website here to give you the story. By the way, the website, www.tusting.co.uk. They say, we specialize in beautiful bags and leather goods for work, play, and travel, meticulously crafted by our team of experts at our Lavenden workshops in the heart of the English countryside. Five generations of knowledge and experience go into every piece, blending timeless style and contemporary flair. So that interview of Alistair and Gillian to come, I really enjoyed it. Learned a lot about the importance of having products made in England. And that's not just us blowing smoke up our own trumpets, if that's a phrase. But Alistair will go on to explain how their customers from all over the world really appreciate and acknowledge the symbolism that it denotes a certain quality, as it were. Alistair will explain it more eloquently than that, but it's one of many great points that we'll touch upon in this chat. And before we get to that with Alistair and Gillian, don't forget to check out the show notes at menswearstyle.co.uk and on the social at menswearstyle. All the latest fashion news. Craig, our editor, has just published an article on stylish glasses that protect your eyes. You think you survived the summer without having to splash out on a pair of sunglasses? Well, what about the winter? Eh? With the low sun and the rays reflecting from the snow surface, that can be hazardous, right? So that article and much more on the website. And if you want to tell us about your brand and your journey, you can email the show at info@menswearstyle.co.uk. Okay? Let's get to it. This is a good one. Hope you enjoy it. That interview of Alistair and Gillian Tusting, Director and Head of Brand at Tusting. Well, it's my great pleasure to introduce Alistair Tusting, Director at Tusting and Co. Limited. And we have Gillian Tusting as well, Head of Brand at Tusting. Lots of Tustings going on. How are we doing today?
Well, it's a family company, you know.
Yes. It is a family company, and I think that's actually one of the key things, that we've got real heritage behind what we're doing and trying and doing our best to keep that moving forward to the 21st century, into the 21st century.
Yes. So I did some research. Is this the fifth generation of leather good manufacturers?
It's a fifth generation of leather people. We started in leather, so we haven't been manufacturing leather goods for all that time, but we have been in leather. And so it was my great-great-grandfather who started making leather in a local village to us here. And as his descendants, we've been carrying on that. And we're all, in one way or another, pretty much, I wouldn't like to say infected by the disease, but we seem to carry on quite a lot in the leather trade. And so we took it from just leather. And our customer base was focused very much on the UK leather trade, even though we trade around the world. But when the leather trade in the UK was, the shoe trade in the UK was declining 30 odd years ago, we realized we needed to diversify and how could we use our skills and our knowledge and our love of the material better. And at that point, an opportunity came along with some people, and we thought, right, let's use our leather knowledge and the skills we could get, and we started making leather goods and luggage at that point.
Okay, interesting. And so what is your role there, Alistair? I know you're the director, but kind of walk me through your day-to-day doings at Tusting.
My day-to-day doings, I think, sort of where the top of the pile, I suppose, within Tusting, really. So my day is, we have a manufacturing team who are in bright and early, 8 o'clock every morning, and they're set they're setting on with the program, our production plan, our work. And as much as I really like spending my time looking at leather, looking at making bags, unfortunately, I spend a lot of my time doing other things rather than just making bags. But I would be a very, very happy person actually to spend most of my time working with leather, making product, and shipping great things that we've made to our customers around the world.
Right. And the bags look fantastic, by the way. So I mean, like, all of the bags, you have handbags, you have travel bags and backpacks. Maybe you can just give me a little insight into how much love and TLC goes into making just, say, one bag.
Well, the bigger the bag, the more work, has actual physical work goes into it, but all of them have got to have the same commitment to wanting to achieve the best we can achieve on every single one. And so that commitment's got to be in everybody doing it, everybody working on the bag. So you have the, as with most production processes, it's broken down to the stages. We have people who can do the whole task from start to finish. But actually, it's better when you break it down and people are really good at individual operations. So the people doing the cutting, let's leave the cutting to them. They've spent a lot of time looking at leather, working with the leather to cut it as best they can for what each bag needs for each. So to maximize the leather for each one, each product. You've then got people doing this as a preparation work, which is very much sort of behind the scenes, where you take those cut pieces of leather and you work on them to check they're okay. You do the edge finishing, you do the preparation work for the actual machining. So the machining doesn't happen on its own. You've got to get it ready to be machined. So there's a whole load of people who work those raw components to get them ready for the actual thread, needle, sewing interaction. And so we have a team of people getting product, the components ready. You then have people who do the actual sewing, and they have been doing the sewing for many years. To do the sewing correctly, that's probably takes about as long as anything to learn it, to get it right, to do it beautifully, to make sure that the stitching is as good and as clean as possible they can make it, takes a long while to get done, to get learn the skills to do that.
Right.
And so we have a team of people doing the machining, and so we have one, and that's split into two, where you have one group who do the machining that works sort of in two dimensions, the flatbed machining, and they do a lot of the details, machining work on the flat components. And they go as far as you can on a regular sewing machine, which looks like a domestic sewing machine, but bigger and heavier. And then we move on to the people who take the flat pieces of work and assemble them into the three-dimensional structure that is a bag. Mm-hmm. And so they have different sewing machines, which are sort of almost with a mechanism floating in the middle of the air. And they take the two-dimensional pieces and they build them together, finish them. And we then have a final group who do the packing and inspection and shipping for those finished pieces.
Wow.
So it's not the longest of processes, but there are lots of individual stages in it, with lots of skill being deployed all the way through.
And the sewing and the stitching, is this how you can distinguish or discern what is a quality bag versus what is just, you know, a kind of off the rack bag? I mean, is this one of the tells?
I think it's one of the tells, yes. I think if you're looking at a piece of luggage or a handbag, obviously you want the stitching to be consistent and neat and uniform throughout the whole piece. But it's just one of the elements you need. You've got to, you need to combine that skill, stitching skill, with the materials. And because you can buy bags made all around the world, which have pretty good stitching in them, but they don't use materials which are going to tell the same story or give the same joy that using the natural leathers is going to do. And you can buy fantastic PU synthetic materials now, which look very, when you buy them, very similar to leather, but they're never going to have that lifetime and generate the patina and generate the character of being used and loved that leather products do. And using really good leathers and using great linings and things, there it's a combination. It's not just the machining, it's the machining, it's the material choices and the care with which the whole thing is put together.
Yeah, I think that's one of the key differences between a product such as we make and a lot of the competition, and they will tend to have used cheaper materials in order to maintain their margins. And those cheaper materials will initially, when they're new, look possibly indistinguishable from beautiful new leather, full grain, really top class leather. But in the use, they will tend to go downhill and show wear. And then you see things underneath the colour that didn't start out as leather, or maybe the innards of leather. Whereas if you start with really top class full grain leather, it will just polish and get better. And if you throw the insults of life at it, it just kind of soaks it up and becomes characterful. Whereas something which is more coated with a lot of leathers now are they have the surface taken off and replaced with a PU coating for durability, apparently, but it's a plastic durability. And, you know, 10 years down the line, that's when you really know the difference, and the cheaper ones will be on the junk heap, and the genuine thing will actually look better for it. You know, as long as you don't mind something that shows a bit of life, and it will still be going strong. And more to the point, can come back to us and be repaired. You know, if there's some wear and so on, that's something that we do a lot, is fix old bags up, particularly briefcases and luggage.
Right.
And that's just not something that you can get easily elsewhere.
Yeah, it's not necessarily the most economically sensible thing to be offering to repair and look after gentlemen's bags, but it's a typical thing that we get briefcases back of people who have loved them for many, many years, and they want to carry on loving them for many years yet, and we help them do that. And actually, that's a reflection of the quality and the care that we put into the product, is that people do want their 10-year-old briefcase or 20-year-old briefcase coming back and saying, could you fix this? Could you do something? It's been run over by a truck or something. Can you help us? And we do our best to do so. You know, sometimes bags are too far gone, but most of the time we can help somebody make them look better.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it becomes part of their day-to-day life. I mean, they almost maybe get emotionally attached to it, because it's something that they'll take with them wherever they go, and something that grows. And like you say, it becomes, the more insults that you throw at it, the character it gets.
It almost becomes an extension of self, and if you have to part with it, then you're parting with something that really means something, and saying goodbye to some of the memories that are loaded up in it as well. I think that's, you know, people don't want to do that.
It
can be a bit irrational, to be fair, but
it can be completely irrational. We have had people come back with sort of this piece of lace work, which once was a great bag but has been worn and used, and they say, well, can you just put it back together for us? And there comes a point, even with there's just not enough fiber sewed together. You know, the linings are just a shred, and the leather is completely and utterly worn away.
But they'll still want it back.
And they still want it back. And you say, well, we can do our best, but we really think you should, at this point, you need a
just
new
buy
one.
Just buy a new bag.
Yeah.
And cases where people have said, all right, I'll have a new bag, but fix the old one as well. And you know full well that they're doing that because they don't want to say goodbye to their friend. And it's a lovely thing.
Well, this is the relationship I have with my socks and my girlfriend. So I'll say to my girlfriend, look, you know, these have got at least another 3 years in them. And she's already motioning towards the bin. But then I say, well, look, hold on a moment. These socks can go out and they can polish the BMW after we're done here. You know, there's so much life left in these socks. You can't just be so dismissive. I mean, she leaves my sock whenever we go away. You know, she'll have a quick inspection and go, right, I think we can leave this one in the hotel.
This is a sustainability argument, because if you can repurpose those socks into car polishing cloth, then that's all good.
Exactly. You've got to think of the socks. You're right. It's okay, sock, you know. You've still got another year or two left.
You just need to make sure you're the last one out the room when you leave the hotel, because you can always do your little scout round.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You get the impression that he's been there, do you?
I feel like we've bonded on that. Yeah, I haven't gone as far as call the concierge after we've left and say, can you just fish that one out? But pretty close.
You are understanding each other, and I and the girlfriend are understanding each other too, I have to say.
it's that emotional attachment we have with our socks. It's an underwritten rule. I digress. Alistair, perhaps you could tell me a little bit about the leather and how you source the leather, and also, I mean, just kind of the leather in general. I hear all the time about Italian leather being the kind of the best in the world. Maybe you can drill down on that a little bit for me.
Leather is one of the primary resources that humans have used since we moved forward from just being
Neanderthals,
pretty much. Even then, it's probably one of the earliest raw materials that humans have used. And so all around the world, there is leather being made. And there's skillful people around the world making leather, but there are a number of things you need to make great leather. You need people with skill and knowledge of what they're doing, and the Italians have a great industry at doing that. But you also need to have the right sort of raw material. So if you buy leather that's come, say, there's a South America, there's some leather that comes out of South America, which is very typical, and the actual hides that the leather is made from the animals have lived a pretty rough life, and the hides show that in the markings and the abrasion and the scratches that are in the leather. And those, you can't ever really get rid of them and make beautiful, beautiful leather. So one of the first things you need is some raw material that is, the animals have led a blessed life. And so the actual skin itself is a beautiful thing. And the leather making skill is to take that beautiful skin and make it better and make it more beautiful. And that's what you're looking for in the leather you're buying. It's a combination of raw material and the skills used to make that into something that we can use in all the ways that leather can be used. And so in our sourcing of leather, you're looking for tanneries who have access to great raw material, and there are places in the world, ways of rearing your animals which help preserve the quality of the skin. So Scandinavian cowhide tends to be good because they have few barbed wire, not very much barbed wire on the fence, in the fencing and the way you husband the animals. So the animals don't scratch on the barbed wire. So you don't end up with horrible
And no insects biting.
And no insects biting them.
Huh, that's fascinating.
Whereas if you go to some parts of Africa or some parts of India, or you may get skin, there's a lot more insect life, there's a lot more things that are going to damage that hide, thorns and stuff like that, and you will get skins which are just covered in thorn marks and scratches. And for our type of leather and what we're doing with it, we don't consider that to be a perfect thing. And so we've got to buy leathers that come from places where you have good animal husbandry that helps us hides.
Happy cattle.
Yeah.
Right.
And so you need the good raw material. You need good people who understand what they're doing with the leather and skillful. And then you build relationships with the tanneries, because they've got to understand what we're trying to do with the leather. And we've got to tell the tanneries, this is what we want. We need our leather a bit more supple. We need the grain to be a little less pronounced, to be a bit smoother. And it's very difficult to specify leather to show its naturalness without building that relationship with the tanner and the customer. So we've got three tanneries we work with a lot, and you've got to build that relationship with them, that they're using the right raw materials, they're consistent to use the same raw material every time as far as you possibly can, because tanning leather is both science, it is a very technical science, but on top of that, there's some real art and understanding how the environment. So a hot day, you've got to be more careful with how you tan the leather than on a cold day. Things like that make a difference, and that's the tanning art. And so you build your relationship with the tanners so they know what you're looking for.
Right.
And you keep that relationship open. So you don't just go and buy the leather on them, just phone somebody up, send me some leather. You've got to understand the people. They've got to understand what we're doing with our leather and how we cut, and we build that relationship.
Okay. And I imagine you've worked with the three tanneries, I mean, over the course of, since you've been in business, it's like 1875, have you, I can't imagine you've chopped and changed many tanneries. Is it,
no,
has it always been like a...
No. We know the people in the tannery, we know the owners, we know the tanneries we're working with, and we have long-term relationships with those. So some of these tanneries are the tanneries which my father, my grandfather was working in and with 60, 70 years ago.
Wow.
They're people who we still work with. So there's these really long relationships that are embedded in what we do.
I imagine it must be those sort of relationships where your clients and your kind of suppliers, if that's the right word, they're kind of on the constant Christmas card list. You know, there's always something that gets sent. I mean, my dad was a steel merchant, and he would always, you know, the same suppliers would send the same wine every year, and he would send the same thing from the butchers. I mean, it was so predictable, but yet there was something quite beautiful about it. But yeah, I can imagine that sort of romance going on with you.
No, you have the same thing. You have this group of people who you work with, both on the tanning industry, the leather, but we maintain that consistency of even the hardware suppliers, the people who make the zips for us. We want those long-term relationships, because that gives us consistency, so that if you come and buy your replacement clipper bag that you've used for 20 years, you want to know that the next one is going to be better than the last one, and you really like the last one, so the next one's going to be fantastic. And that comes from all of those relationships, all of that family business relationship with your suppliers, and it makes it more efficient for us in how we work the company, in that you're pretty sure you know who you're going to buy that leather from when you're developing a new product, or you know where you're getting the hardware or the zippers. It's not that those relationships preclude innovation, because each one of these suppliers is working on new products and new innovation all the time, but you have an understanding of what you're trying to get to achieve together.
Yeah, and I guess these relationships need to be fostered and nurtured over the years. And talking about new products, do you have any other items that you've thought about trying, or any other perhaps garments? I mean, you used to supply the leathers for shoes. Have you ever thought about going into that area?
Shoes is really difficult because we have relationships with the shoe factories, and we know it's a tough old life making shoes, and you also, they've got the skills they've built over the long term to enable them to make product which is the best shoes that they can make.
Right.
So I think our take on that is that we have certain skill sets we want to maximize and use our skills as best we can. And so although there are areas we keep pushing the boundaries out to different areas, but actually we know that some things are probably just one step too far for us quite a lot of the time.
Also, right. I think there's some really wonderful shoemakers in our area who make, you know, the best shoes in the world. And it would be a brave person who decided that they could match or exceed that from scratch. So as much as we know plenty about the leather, you know, sometimes you should let the people who are really good at things do the things they're really good at. And and we'll stick to
we're here.
We know, yeah.
We're just on the edge of Northamptonshire. Actually, we're talking to you from Northamptonshire, and Northamptonshire still actually has some fantastic, Gillian says, shoemakers, and we know them, and they do a fantastic job. And I would not like to presume that we can do what they're doing, but equally, when they need bags, they come and see us because they know that we can do bags.
That's nice. That's good to know. Yeah, Northampton is, that's not too far away from my mum's as well. That's very much the epicenter of shoemaking.
Oh, absolutely.
I believe like churches. I don't know if Crockett and Jones is down there, but I know churches.
Yep, they're in Northampton.
They're all in Northamptonshire. So you've got in the middle of Northampton, or not now in the middle, but you've got Church and Crockett. You've got there in Kettering.
They're in Kettering. But they're you've close. Got,
come on, there's a million got, miles away.
You've got Lobb, you've got Edward Green, you've got Trickers. And then you've got outside, you've got Cheney and
on our doorstep right here where we're sitting, we've got MPS and
Dr. Martin.
And Dr. Martin's,
and
of course,
Dr. Martin's are there,
now
yeah.
making some of their product back in the county, having, you know, previously offshored all of it. So there's a good resurgence there as well.
Yeah, I mean, a little bit of story there, and that resurgence in making here for some of the shoe factories is driven by overseas customers, especially in Asia, wanting that heritage of made in England in their whatever they're buying. And that's a really strong thing for us, a strong story and message that we tell to our customers overseas is you're buying into that heritage when you're buying a tusting product.
And it's very much a common point for all of the shoemakers, the top shoemakers and leather goods makers in Britain, is that we all have a key part of our markets is export, and specifically to Eastern markets, because they hugely value that made in Britain thing. In fact, you know, it's often a question asked, but how important is it to make in Britain? And the curious answer is it's more important to our overseas customers than it is to the UK customers, which is odd, but nonetheless, it's a thing.
Well, so Japanese customers want the made in England, and they'll pay a big premium for the made in England rather than a made, I don't know, in Thailand or somewhere like that. Mm. They want the made in England. That's a big story for them.
That's fascinating. I mean, it kind of makes sense. So is that, would you say the outside of that though is the main demographic in England for you?
Well, we're exporting a good half of what we make, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's well split, to be honest. We have very strong market in America, in Japan and in China. That's slightly close to Newcastle when it comes to making leather goods. But again, in China, you've got a really fast growing demand for British luxury goods. So they're kind of following, perhaps, if I'm brave enough to say, where the Japanese have been for a few decades, really, on that demand. And so it's kind of even, really, what we're selling. You know, we probably sell as much overseas, in fact, more than we sell in the UK.
Right.
And those Eastern markets are, they're toiling a bit at the moment, but most places around the world are toiling, but there's still a lot of demand there for us. And we're part of our growth strategy for the next 2 years to get us out of the turmoil that is COVID, is to build customer bases out in Asia.
Okay.
So quite a lot of my day, when you say what's my day start like? Well, there's starts with a bit of making and talking to people about making product. And then I talk to team out in Asia who are helping sell product out in Asia for us.
Okay, interesting. And so the website, by the way, it looks really good. I should give people a place to go, tusting.co.uk. Has a great kind of layout to it. It's very easy to navigate your way around. How long has the e-commerce site been on, and what was the process of getting that all up and running?
Bizarrely, Tusting was a really early adopter on the website front. The first one goes back, I should think,
20 years.
Yeah, pushing 20 years. I mean, from the really, really early days of people having websites, and it was an e-commerce website right then and there. I don't think we really knew how to promote the website in those days, so it just was found naturally. But as there weren't very many people doing websites for their made in Britain leather goods, it wasn't that hard to get found. But we've been doing it all along. The current website has been in the existing design for probably about 2 years now. And something which we, you know, care an awful lot about is the customer experience, and it's everything from their first interface with us, which usually now is the website, right through to every email, to every phone call. And, you know, we're only a little company, so you will get a personal experience. And we kind of wanted that feel for the website so that people could see the beauty of the product, but still feel that they knew what actually went into it and that there were real people in a real country, in a real county, making it all. And, you know, that we're very approachable should you want to, you know, ask a question.
Right.
And we have people who spend a lot of time working on talking to customers about working through their requirements. And so many of our customers will phone up and want, can you do this for me? Can you, even if it's just talking about the shipping, and that customer service is key to the relationship people are going to have with the products we're going to sell to them, because they want to know that it's not only the product, but the way they're treated is at the right level. And we all like that. We all like to feel that somebody really cares about selling something to them.
I've got to tell you, it's massively important, because I'm going to digress, but I'll bring it all the way back round. Just in the last couple of weeks, I've had two exchanges with supposedly big businesses, one being a gym and one being a phone company. Now, I had trouble with my phone. It powered down and never came back on. And ironically, I couldn't even reach out and call them. I couldn't even call them from my girlfriend's phone to resolve it. Yeah. So it kind of sent me around in like online emails and chatbots and help rooms and forums. But I thought, this is so surreal that it's a phone company and there's no one on the other end of this phone that can help me resolve this problem. And the same with the gym. The gym is just down the road. I tried to cancel it on the subscription, went in, and they said, you have to go away and download an app. and cancel it. I said, well, I'm kind of standing right in front of you. Can we not do it here and now? And they said, well, go away. And by the way, I did it all again and downloaded the app and cancelled it, and they still tried to take money out of my account. But
you came, I imagine you came away from that experience feeling ticked off with them, unhappy, and just with a sense of disenfranchisement.
Yeah.
It's, from the world. Why do you have to do that? All I want to do is for you to listen to me and do what I ask you to do. I've asked you politely to do it. And that, I find it hugely frustrating when somebody just puts a stupid barrier in your way. All they could have said is, yes, sir, no problem, I can cancel that for you now.
Well, it's all about time, really. I think it's the only commodity that no one really puts any premium on, but it's the only thing that we actually have is time. And if I'm spending 3 days, 4 days back and forth to the phone shop, then to the gym, and then, by the way, nothing's resolved by the end of 3 weeks, it just becomes like this endless circle. So I implore you, you've really just got to hang on to that personal side of your business. I mean, even on the website, I can see that you can come down and visit the showrooms, you know, have the walk around. Is that still going on, by the way, amidst the pandemic? What's the situation?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, we just, at the moment, we just kind of have to do it by appointment rather than people just show up, because obviously we have to be careful of shielding the workforce.
Right.
But that time thing that you say is so key, because what's actually happened with those companies that are not giving you what you want is they've prioritized their time and their systems to make themselves efficient and forgotten what it means for the customer. And actually, the whole business is about the customers. If the customers aren't happy, they're not going to have a business. But there they are, shooting themselves in the foot because they've just really pissed off the customer. And it's really not difficult. You know, if you just put the customer first and say, what does the customer want? How do I make it fab for the customer? We'll you know, scrabble like swans underwater, making it happen. But fundamentally, if the customer's happy, they're going to come back and back and back and back. And it's really simple. It's so simple, it's difficult, I guess.
I don't know where that switch has to occur where businesses kind of get so emphatically big that they can no longer be reachable. I know basically that you have to kind of be this huge monolith, and they don't want people like me just coming along and exploiting everyone's time, whatever. But that does feel like there has to be some kind of cutoff where they just go, do you know what? We'll just put this guy on an answer machine. we'll send him around on choose option one for this, choose option two for that. And by the end of it, you've wasted half an hour and you've got nowhere. I just gave you about a month of my life during lockdown there. So sorry about that. But that's don't worry, I'll edit all that out. But that was a slight window into my frustration of big businesses.
I think part of what we're trying to do is keep the human side of our business strong and alive, because we think it's hugely important that's the people like our products and want our products, not just because they're great products, but there's some humanity behind them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I feel like I've learned a lot today. It's been wonderful speaking to you both. I want to be respectful of your time, so I'll perhaps just send people to the website, which is tusting.co.uk, to find out more about the products and have a mooch you around and get lost within the story and all the great imagery on the site. I guess hopefully I'll speak to you all soon and wish you best of luck.
That would be fantastic. Yes.
If you are up in Northamptonshire, give us a call and we'd love to show you around.
I'd love that. Yeah, no, I'd love that. That's not too far away for me when I go visit my mum.
Come to a virtual tour of us.
Yes, yeah. Come and give us one of your other things. Do us a virtual tour. That would be amazing, actually. Maybe that's a conversation for later.
Yes, I'll hit pause and we'll carry on. Excellent. Well, thank you, Gillian. Thank you, Alistair.
You're very welcome.
Take care.
It's lovely to talk to you.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, how about that? Really enjoyed that one. And if you don't have a deeper appreciation for quality leather bags and accessories, then there is no helping you. So make sure you're supporting the good guys and head over to tusting.co.uk and treat yourself or your loved one to some quality leather goods and put some money in the local economy. While you're at it, eh? In the meantime, thanks for tuning in. If you like what you're hearing, leave a review. Maybe there's a brand or a person you think would be a great guest on the show. Put your suggestions in a comment on iTunes or wherever it is that you listen. Until next time. Thank you.